Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the UAW Factory Whistle Show with Donnie C., Dick, Scott, and Jeff. They talk about union workers' opinions, concerns, and questions. Call in and join the conversation at 347-324-3752.
All too often these days, the factory whistle is falling silent in America. But there is a way to get American workers back to work. Start buying more American-made products. Now, a Michigan-based company is leading the way in this movement to strengthen our economy. It's called AmericanMadeProducts.com. AmericanMadeProducts.com is more than a way to purchase American-made products online quickly and securely. It's a way to get our economy moving in the right direction. Go online or call and speak to a live customer service representative. AmericanMadeProducts.com, a family company based on the belief in the American worker and the quality of American-made products. If you're an American manufacturer, big or small, and would like your products on our site, contact us. We add products daily. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your employer about AmericanMadeProducts.com. Visit, shop, and watch America grow. AmericanMadeProducts.com.
We are Forever Green Grow Supplies for all your indoor and outdoor growing needs. We carry a full line of many big-name vendors in stock. We also offer dried herbs, spices, and many blends of tea, with fresh herbs coming in February. Open to help you from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. Visit our website at forevergreengrow.com or like us on Facebook. Located in Vassar, Michigan at 340 South Main Street, right across from M&J Auto. We offer discreet delivery within 10 miles of Vassar. Stop in and see us soon or call us at 989-882-9177. We are looking forward to helping you. Thanks in advance, Forever Green.
How you doing, Scott?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing today?
Ruby, welcome to the UAW Factory Whistle. There we go. On January 25th, 2015.
Oh,
and
shit.
I have something to say. I erased my emails by accident, and we have no emails, and I apologize to each and every one that wrote, if you did write. I know one person did, and it was about something I wasn't going to talk about anyway. As I said last week, I hit the wrong thing and took care of passwords and all kinds of different things. So, went to the mail, that old mail, and all this, and it's gone. They're all gone. So, it's on you, buddy.
Uh-oh. I didn't do it.
We could be
in trouble.
I didn't
hit the wrong button.
It's definitely on you to come up with something, and you can go to workplaces and unions, too, on Facebook. And, before we start this thing, let me just say congratulations to Teresa Dodge, 40.8 years.
I think it was 41.
41 years. That's true. I met her once in the plant. She worked upstairs, and everybody had a lot of good things to say about her. And he does a hell of a job on workers' workplaces and unions. And I just want to thank her for all the good things she puts out for people to read. And for all the good work she did at General Motors.
There you go. 41.8 years. Congratulations, Teresa.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. And I know she's like me, and I know she probably is. You get these rotator cuff tears and I know I've got one in my right shoulder, my left shoulder, and knees, and all kinds of good things are going on. But Teresa, enjoy your retirement.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
So,
as Don said, go to Workers, Workplaces, and Unions on Facebook. excuse me, there's been a lot of activity in the last couple few days. Teresa's put some really good stuff up that is definitely worth time to step back and get a cup of coffee and read some of the stuff. It kind of will help me to understand what's going to be happening this year. And not just as far as union, but in part with the economy and the laws of the land and how that's going to affect the unions. Because I remember this one article I'm going to touch on real quick, that we have TV ads badgering the National Labor Review Board that about the laws, and it's going to be a very ticklish subject this year with a lot of people. And I mean ticklish is it's going to make people jump and squirm. Ticklish as far as uncomfortable. It's going to be a knockout dragout, I believe. We'll see what happens. This, I believe, will be the last stand for a major labor organization, I believe. Teresa put up an excellent article that was written in the Detroit News, and it's showing the unions that were weaker.
Very.
Because of the laws. And some things are closed down, or some new organizing stalls, and former members of unions choose to become free riders. That is, they're covered, but they don't have to pay dues. This is a Roland Mazzullo. He's an assistant research scientist at the University of Michigan Institute for Labor and Industrial Relations. Said the impact of the right to work legislation has been weakening the unions, and this is why. Dennis Williams says that an average state with the right to work laws have $6,400 less in salary to union members and fewer benefits, less retirement, and reduced consumer spending money. So the practical impact on Michigan's economy from today's members are that consumers have less money to spend in stores with small businesses, and yes, even on cars. And I took that out of the article, but you know, I have to stop and think about that for a second. Mr. Williams, you're going to put this in print, but I'm not going to let you have your cake and eat it too. You've cut our wages, the active workers, the ones who are the dues-paying members here, the seniority dues-paying members. You've cut our wages. And yet you have the audacity to come out and say something about this, about right to work laws in our own state, when we have fewer benefits and our retirement has been reduced, and the money that we can spend. Really? It's not just about right to work people right now. It's about us, the active workers right now. And I find that really a slap in the face. It's insulting. I understand he's talking about right to work, but in the same token, you need to look at how you treat your own members. And you wonder why people are leaving. And if you go into the article even farther, there's graphs and there's some charts in there. And I'm trying to find, there it is. The membership has fallen in the right-to-work states drastically. And in Michigan alone, from 12 of 03, I believe is what the chart is saying now. Say it first. Yes. 12 of 03 through 12 of 2014, you went from 911,000 union members to 585,000 union members.
That was a drop.
Total percentage, that's a big drop. And the total percentage from unions from to 2014 in the United States went from 13.3 to, I believe, 11.1%. And in Michigan, you went from 21% to 14.5. That's a big drop. It's hard. It's hard. They said you went from 656,000 workers in 2013 to 631,000. That's just the percentage just from 2013 to 2014. If these numbers are right, and I believe they got them from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is what we're. Teresa put that website up there on workers, workplaces, and unions, so you can go look these numbers for yourself. And if you want to believe me or the what's being printed in the paper, in the article, go look at yourself. Remember also that you can also find, I believe under that same link, you'll be able to fish around. You might be able to find cost of living. And I think also at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you're going to find what the true unemployment is. All the politicians and the media, they like to put that first number out there. It's just usually the lowest. To get to the actual number of where we're at for more of a reality, you need to go down to the bottom number. I think there's either 5 or 6 numbers. If you go to that bottom number, that bottom number includes everybody who is underemployed, which means they're not making enough money for what they're doing, or they're doing a job that is, let's say, an entry-level job, and they're considered somebody that is an expert, so they're being underpaid. So there's underdeployed. It also gives you the numbers of the people who have quit looking for unemployment, the people who have fallen off the unemployment rolls, and the people who are unemployed. All those numbers are added up together, and it gives you a much different number than what the media poses out, or even from what the son of a gun, our governor in the state of Michigan, talked about unemployment rates. Those aren't true numbers. And furthermore, those numbers, out of those numbers, how many of those are jobs that are created are at living wage or above? And that's another thing that we don't get to hear. I mean, Walmart tomorrow can create 1 million jobs at $8 an hour, and that would affect the numbers. But it doesn't affect the 1 million people that got hired at $8 an hour. And how they're supposed to be responsible citizens to the United States of America and the tax base and to the states which they live, and their dreams of maybe getting married and having a child and owning a home and buying a new car. $8 an hour isn't going to happen. That's the reality of it. And it's sad that these numbers, that these people keep putting the... They're not false numbers. They're just not complete numbers. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yes, I do. And another thing, just say this. When the union's going good, everybody's wages went up. I mean, it didn't matter where you work, it went up. Now that the unions are going down, membership-wise, financially, everybody else is going down. That is the truth. That is black and white.
And it is. There's a reason for that. A lot of people paid better wages for another, still a way of putting it, was to keep the unions out.
Right.
So they would offer, they'd offer a decent wage, some kind of a savings or a retirement program and benefits. They just figured if they just went ahead and did that, maybe not make it, you know, a luxury style for them, but it gives them the opportunity to do something. It was cheaper than trying to go to battle with a union to come in and have a union come in and negotiate a contract, which might cost them more. So what they would do is they would go, let's say, you know, we'll go within a couple, $3 of what the other union shops are paying for this, and, you know, we'll do this, we'll do that. And a lot of people were then happy with that. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, a very small percentage of employers would actually give you better. And that was to poke the finger in the eye of the union people. Excuse me. So that they would say, you know, hey, look, you don't need a union to get a good wage. And if the employer was could afford that, some of them did. I know in Kalamazoo, you're old enough to remember, and some of the people might be old enough to remember, a company by the name of Upjohns.
Oh, yeah.
Upjohns had, you know, Mice and Tracin, and Upjohn was, for the really old people who go back to the groovy 60s, man, it's in the early 70s, was Upjohns was the manufacturer of Quaaludes. I mean, there were other things that they did, too. Mice and Tracin.
Are you trying to say something about me and Quaaludes?
No. I just said if we were old enough to remember, you know.
Okay, I got
some
it.
Of us, some people have been around that. I might have known about that. I'm just saying. But that was Upjohns.
Yeah.
I know what I'm saying. Upjohns was large. Right. At that time, well, actually, they made the Quaaludes. A little bit of history for that was the test pilot for them was ran at the Kalamazoo. I want to say it was called this insane. It wasn't called the insane asylum. I think it was called the psychiatric asylum for mental health. And that building is, but most of that building is still there, believe it or not. And they brought those in, and that was to have a calming effect. I guess without going to something like Thorazine or something that make you just sit there and look blank into space and drool all over yourself, but the Quaaludes was to help, you know, calm people down, which it did, and people realized that, hey, that could be a lot of fun on the outside too, you know. But anyway, Upjohn at that time was one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. And they were based out of Portage, Michigan, which is just south of Kalamazoo. And what happened with Upjohn was you had Stryker was there. You had General Motors was there. You had some bigger companies that were paying better, good wages. They brought their people in. Upjohn brought their people in and paid them better than industry standard wages, give them more personal time off. It was, if you could get hired in the Upjohns back in the day, that was like the dream come true.
You're right.
Give you Christmas bonuses. I mean, they really, Upjohn was a family-owned business, by the way, and they really took care of their employees exceptionally well. And then since then, they've sold off. They bought in with somebody else, and then they sold out completely. And then that person, I can't remember how many hands it changed, but now it's Pfizer. And anybody who follows, you know, the bigger corporation, Pfizer is one of the largest in the world. But my point was, Upjohn offered wages, retirement. They give you full pension plus your Social Security. I think you had to work 28 years to get a full pension. You got your full pension and your Social Security and your benefits. So when you walked out the door, you know, to retire from Upjohn's was even better than retiring from General Motors at that time. And that was non-union. And they did that for a reason, was to jab at the people who were wanting to join a union. Back in the 70s, I mean, that was, like you said, a union job was worth its weight in gold. Everybody wanted those jobs. Look at the people who come to Flint.
That's right.
It was Flint at one time. I've said this before, and I probably should look it up and find it online somewhere so I can give you some stats, or maybe put it up on workers, workplaces, and unions. But I've always been told that at one time in the early 70s, that the largest industrial city in the United States was Flint, Michigan, and that there were more people moving to Flint, Michigan from across the United States than to anywhere else. And it was to come to the factories to get these good-paying union jobs. And I think, you know, we have to look 40, 50 years away now. We look and to see the decay and the erosion that's happened with our own union. And not just our union, but other unions are having problems. John Deere's laying off 900 people, I think, over out of Iowa State alone. They said because of the grain and the cost of oil and stuff. So they don't need to build the machinery that they had because of whatever the reason was. I didn't read all the articles. I just saw that they were laying 900 people off. And that was just in one state.
Yeah.
People are still being laid off.
I thought they were
moving
some of their work. And I cannot tell you where now. Slips in my mind. And that was the reason. But I don't know if that's the reason or not. But I understood it to be the reason that they were moving some of their business out of the country. I could be talking
right.
You wrong. But yeah, 900. Almost 900 people are getting laid off.
It really, really is sad.
Because you can't replace jobs. You cannot replace them.
No.
Where are these people going to make that kind of money? Or any kind of money? They're going to lose houses, cars, whatever. And they don't give you a year to think, you know, save up. Make sure you save up. They just drop the bomb on you. You know that.
Yep. And to get back to that article real quick, Greg McNeely, he's president of the Michigan Freedom Fund, it's a conservative group, said the drop in union membership was a sign that workers were exercising their choices. And I quote him, "As Michigan workers become aware of their rights, more and more are choosing freedom, opting out of the union, and keeping dues money in their family's bank accounts, not their union bosses." And then a spokesman for Governor Rick Snyder, her name was Sarah Werfel, said right to work wasn't aimed at reducing membership. It was never about union membership. In fact, it preserved the role of the unions in the collective bargaining. It was simply about allowing every worker to choose for themselves whether to join the union or not was right for and benefits for them, and giving Michigan an additional tool to help ensure our state's economic competitiveness. I believe, in most instances, I believe this is true. And in my opinion, if you get cheap labor, you have cheap products.
I agree.
The cheaper you make the wages, the less likely you are to attract someone. I believe there's more quality driven. And when you're making small money, when somebody who's doing something that's comparable to what you're doing, and they're a union shop, and they're making twice as much as you are, you'd like to get to where they're at. It just, you get that sense of pride and joy of your job is gone. And it affects the total product. And when I hear people talk about this, I've said it all along, the right to work is a bad thing. Yes, they do use it to bust the unions. I don't care what any paper says. It's not my opinion. I can prove that when right to work comes into these states do worse financially than what they did before. Case in point, look at Indiana. Indiana really, really took it on the chin. You know, they fought tooth and nail. That was, what, that 8 years ago? They fought tooth and nail to get their white right to work?
Yeah, I believe it was. Just a very few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and then they seen their state revenue drop, I mean, by double-digit percentages. And finally, some of the people come out and said, well, you know, maybe the right to work thing wasn't the right way to go. Because it ended up affecting their tax base. And the right to work, in my opinion, is all it does is it empowers the corporation to take advantage of the workers even more, but to do it legally. So, 'cause we know it's all about the dollar. But with that being said, you know, the right to work is... It's a bad thing. It really is. I put a quote up this week from Robert Reich. He used to be the former labor secretary. Talked about something that, you know, I don't know if you've seen that or not, but his quote is, the TPP is a Trojan horse in a global race to the bottom, giving big corporations and Wall Street banks a way to eliminate any and all laws and regulations that get in the way of their profits. Wow.
Yes, that's pretty strong.
Well, I mean, everybody else wants to dance around, you know, what is TPP or what is TPIP? That is the other one. The TPIP. They're both really bad. But this is the one that just flabbergasts me. I mean, you've got somebody who used to be a labor secretary who's saying what this is. And we still have our leaders from the United States. The president's pushing this. There's people, senators and congressmen that are pushing this. We even have people within our own, used to be within our own union. I don't know if Bob King is still a member of the UAW or not, but he endorsed this, and he sits on one of the subcommittees on behalf of the president. And he said, if you remember before he retired, remember what he did say, that this would be good. The union workers would back this. See how far out of base and how touchy he is with reality. But, you know, it's not a good thing. I had tried to find, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I'm going to work harder this week because I used to have a chart from the UAW and themselves that show what the average wage was of a UAW worker, and the average pay was over $19 an hour. And I'd like to see what the numbers are now, to see what the average wage is now, because you've allowed Tier 2 and some of the corporations that they have negotiated with over different wages. I would like to see what that new number is, because if that's true, then you're not even bringing people in at the very wage. You talk about being an average wage. And I understand the average would be from low to high and then average it out amongst your membership. I would like to see what those new numbers are in light of the Bureau of Labor Statistics' new information about the drop in union members and some of the unions who have just folded up, right? So wouldn't that affect those numbers? I'm just things I was thinking of. It would be interesting. It'd be very interesting to see those numbers come out and what they reflect from 5 years ago.
It would be interesting.
Because, you remember when this Tier 2 first thing started up when we were doing the show. I had brought that up, what the average wage was, what they had put on their own website. And here you are hiring people in a General Motors facility at less than that average wage that you said that would be your average.
Right.
So, like I said, we know how the average is way out. Well, how many people do you have that are not working at the Big Three or the Detroit Three? Well, actually, you have to count them too. How many people are working from the Big Three and down and across the state who make less than $16 an hour? What's the number of those people compared to the people who make, let's say, from $16 an hour to $30 an hour? The reason I asked that question is I caught somebody making a comment that works at Ford, and he believes, this is his opinion, that he believes that Ford is going to really actively and very conscientiously go after, he said that dirty word that I don't like, legacy. I would call it the seniority workers in a buyout. He believes that Ford is going to go 100% full bore on this to buy out all the seniority workers.
Wow. They better offer a lot of money.
Well, just it. I guess you need to do cost analysis and cost comparison and time, you get your number crunchers and, they get their sharp pencils out there.
Yeah.
Start looking out, okay, how much am I going to have to pay them out if they stay for this long? How much am I going to pay if they stay this long? What's the pension going to cost me? What's the benefits going to cost me as compared to letting the union have it? There's a lot of variables that can be put into this whole equation. And I'm sure somebody's thinking, look, if I got another guy who's got another 10 to get to his 30, and let's say he stays longer because he's younger, let's say he goes 35 years, I can have 15 years of full wages, benefits for him, his kids, or his family. I'm going to add up all this, and how much money I'm going to have to pay him for his vacation and his call-in sick days and holidays and all the stuff that I have to add up. What's that going to cost me per individual out to 15 years? And then how long would it take me to recover that cost if I brought somebody in at lower wages, right? That would seem like that would be the way you do it, right? So if you was to figure that out, they'd probably think that they'd save money and they would recoup that money in less than 15 years of what it took, you know, to pay somebody off or to buy somebody out to get to that 15 years. Because this way I could hire twice as many people. See, now look, I'm hiring people. I can hire twice as many people and at a half wage, and I don't have to give them anything as far as a pension goes. I think they have to offer a 401k, right, a savings plan?
Yeah, I think it's 401 they have to give them.
Okay. Now, I don't know how with the Affordable Care Act work. I believe that somebody's going to really bring it to light here real shortly as the people who are called the Tier 2. They, I believe the corporations are obligated to give them the same health benefits that the seniority workers have. If they don't, I believe they would be eligible, General Motors as being they, would be eligible for a fine from the IRS because of them not meeting their requirement.
Yeah.
As far as, you know what I'm saying? Because when you have so many employees, you have to cover so many. I'm trying to think how the law worked. It went different. If you had like 100 people or less, there was a different wage. And if there was 100 people to 1,000, there was a different scenario, you know, as far as money went. And then if you were considered a large, what do they call it, a multi-level employer, like
right.
General Motors
yeah.
would be or Ford or Chrysler, they were like
yeah.
they were at the top. They were at the pinnacle. They were at the very top. And if somebody had said something about if weren't getting the same benefits at the time that you were still working that we were getting, then they would have to go into the Affordable Care Act to get, which would have been better coverage than what they had, because they had nothing, to get better coverage. And if that was the case, because I guess of the size of the employer, General Motors had to pay a fine per each one of those. And I don't know how that whole thing's working out yet.
Well, if General Motors offers Tier 2 benefits, they have to come up to the Obamacare standard. And if it's not, they have to pay a fine. That's the way I understand it. If you're 80 years old, you still have to pay for birth control. That sort of thing. You know, it absolutely makes no sense what's in this Obamacare package that you have to buy. Now, you know, Bob that does the show with me on Saturday night, his just, you know, his employer pays for his insurance, but his wife, they took care of hers too, but now it's went up so much, it's coming out of his pocket. He's got a really, and I mean, it's huge. It's not just a small monthly bill. It's a good chunk of money, and to get her to where she qualifies on, you know, to be even with Obamacare, I should say. So, and it's going to come out this year. You wait. There's going to be a lot of screaming people, and they're already warning people. You're going to be very shocked when you go to the IRS or when you get that.
Right, when you do the taxes. Yeah, when you do your taxes.
Yeah.
Or when you think you have a return coming back and they send you a letter back with what you thought was going to be a return is actually going to end up being an IOU kind of a thing, right?
Right. And it keeps going up. And if you think, well, he said that this is really for the poor people, well, they're going to pay too. And they can't afford to pay. If you got a little job, you know, you make a bunch of money, well, you're still going to pay. And when you think you're getting all that tax back on your rights, Scott, when they get that check, they'll be surprised. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. And even Gruber, remember the guy that said American people were stupid? That's how they got it passed. He's the one that wrote the bill.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah, he said American people were stupid. And, well, we were only stupid because nobody knew what was in it. We the people that, you know, dig into things and try to get information, we sort of knew it was really bad. I thought it was really bad. Then the rest of the story came out, and I was blown away. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, you only have yourself to blame, really, because we jammed the phone lines and everything else. And they don't care. Money is going to the pharmaceuticals. Money's going to insurance companies, the big ones. And it's going to put the little ones out of business. It's a mess. It's going to be a terrible waste of our money, is what it is.
Absolutely agree. I mean, he said that they were banking on the stupidity of the American people not to look into this.
That's right.
I mean, what bigger insult? I think I told you about the right. Exactly. I think I told you about the farmers last week. They've got a small amount of employees, and they still haven't been able to figure out. I followed up on that story. They still haven't been able to find out. What do they have to pay? The law says the fine for them not carrying health insurance on each one of their employees at a standard, the fine was like $36,000 an employee because they have less than 100 employees, more than 20 or more than 25, less than 100. It's different, but I'm thinking that's a big fine.
Yeah, there's definitely different formulas. It's going to add to unemployment. And because if you have, if you say you've got a business, you've got 75 employees, and you're going to have to pay. You're just going to, you know, isn't it 50? I haven't read it in a while. I think it's, you got to have less than 50 employees or something like that to miss getting stabbed in the wallet. But I can't. I'll have to go back because it's going to heat up again. I need to read it again. But it's incredible. And none of them wrote it. You know, Pelosi acts like, you know, says she didn't even know who Gruber was. But this is the guy, and of course she did, and so did the Republicans that wanted it. They all knew who he was. He wrote the damn thing. And he came out and said it's going to be a week ago he came out and said it's going to be a sticker shock on a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. And he's getting ready to go back in front of Congress because they're going to drill him again. But
now, here's another thing, funny we talk about him. Saying, you know, they banked on the ignorance of Americans. And I did see that video. He was at some dinner or gala or whatever, and he spoke.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was appalled. But here's the catch-22. For all of us that are currently working at one of the big three, or I don't know how it's going to work for the retirees.
Either.
We are not outside that scope of that language either. and I'm two parts. Two parts. The first part is stupidity, and the second part, I shouldn't call stupidity, the ignorance, because of the difference. The ignorance and the laziness for the average American not to look into this. And two is we're not going to be outside the scope of the law is because we'll also have fines that we're going to have to pay. Because if you look under the current law, what we have is considered what they call a Cadillac plan. We have a better than usual health care plan. And if it's one of the main auto workers or some of the other places, like the state employees, some of the state employees have a better health insurance program than we do. If you have a better than usual or is it better than high average health care plan, you're going to get fined for that also.
I remember that coming out too, and I remember the word Cadillac plan coming out a lot. And to be honest, I don't know. I'm sure General Motors falls pretty, and if they're not in it, they're pretty close to being in it. I really don't know. But we were considered a Cadillac plan a few years ago when this all when they started seeing all this.
Two on this, isn't that it's the employer that has to pay the fine. It's the individual. That's the sticker point. Unless I got that wrong when I read through this three or four different times, and at that time when it was first rolled out, I'm sure the numbers are different now, so I can't give you a quote. But at the time, it was about between $1,800 and $2,000 what my fine was going to be.
And
because my employer offered me.
Really, what
plan.
Feature? There's a gentleman in California and his family of three, his wife and his daughter. Now, they're fined $5,000 something, and $5,000 something. He couldn't believe it. He said, "Now I'm paying for everybody that doesn't have insurance, and now I can't afford the insurance I had." These people weren't rich. Let me put it that way. They're just like us.
Sure.
But they're in California,
right.
So I don't know if it goes state. I don't know how they work it. But anyway, he showed the bill. And he said, "Now I'm going to have to drop down and get under what they consider a Cadillac deal." Now, that's a lot of money coming out of your pocket. And he pays for his insurance anyway. Now, I know my sister pays for Blue Cross. It went sky high. It went high. Like I said, Bob, his wife, he's paying. It's unbelievable how much he's paying. And it's a simple coverage. It's nothing spectacular. And they got a huge deductible. If you go to the emergency room, it's $3,500. It's unbelievable. But people don't, ignorant, crazy for not looking. A lot of people trust their government. And a lot of people trust their union. The union was, that's great. This is going to be great. And that's how you heard from our union. That's how great everything's going to be. This is the best, he's going to get it through and all this. But they knew, they also knew what was going on. And a lot of people are going to be hurt, and it's a terrible thing to me. And it's not going to, and believe me, it's not insuring half the people they say it. They said it was going to insure. It's not insuring. But just like everything else, now people, a lot of people, UAW members and all unions across the board are saying, hey, this sucks, man. This isn't a good deal. How could you do this to us? Just like TPP. I finally, Trunka, I think it was Trunka, came out and said TPP is the worst. And so there's another union official. And there was a few more. Of course, not our union. But other unions have come out and saying they're against TPP. You think you can trust your government not to, you know, to do right for American people? But all on both sides, they put money in their pockets. They get the money in their pockets. Pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies, they get millions. And, you know, that we get sold out. American people get sold out because they trust the fact that people aren't going to read what's going on. And yeah, it's hard to find, too, sometimes, God. You have to admit that. You don't hear it on TV. Sometimes you got to get on the line, get online and dig in. Sometimes you even have to go to overseas and get their newspapers like we do and see what they're saying and then kind of back check and push it up. And usually they don't have no bone, you know. They're not getting anything out of it, so they tell pretty much the truth. Also, back check, make sure you're giving the right facts. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it brings me back to a quote of Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson wasn't a perfect human being, but he was a very smart individual who is one of our founding fathers. Out of a couple handfuls of men who I thought were wise beyond their years, had this to say. He said, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them."
That's right. That's right.
I mean, there's a lot of quotes out by Thomas Jefferson and the forefathers, but that one really hits home.
And there are a few of them saying sometimes, and I'm not going to quote him exactly, but you're going to have a revolution in this country every so often.
Absolutely. Right.
Get your country.
Thank you. Every 20 years or so, the government, the people should have a revolution to keep your to keep your government honest. He also, I remember, I used to know a lot of quotes from Jefferson. If a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, but he's obligated to do so.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're right.
The only guy that I could be getting him mixed up, but the only guy that had a balanced budget didn't know anything at
he
all.
He might have.
And he got rid of the New York bank that is now morphed into the Federal Reserve. He got rid of that, and we printed our own money. But anyway, Jefferson was pretty damn smart, and wish he was around. I wish we had a Thomas Jefferson.
Right. In the early 1800s, as he got to be older, he said the end of the democracy and the defeat of the American Revolution will occur when government falls into the hands of lending institutions and moneyed corporations. You know, you're talking well over 200 years ago, almost 300
right.
years ago now.
And he's seen
that this guy said this.
So, and that's what
where
we got Wall Street, we got the Federal Reserve that owns us, and it hurts. Yeah, it hurts every American, but we're getting into politics.
Right. So anyway,
but politics.
There's good.
politics, all of us at our plants too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I'm glad you say that, because the governor over in Wisconsin, he's getting ready to push for a right to work again.
Yeah,
she put that up, and I'm glad she did. All you have to do, I guess, when it comes to this right to work, if you think that it's all that, and if you're a business owner and you think it's all that, because what it does do is the right to work, it does put more money in the hands of the corporation. Didn't say they're going to share that with the people in any sense. Plus, the same corporations who are already getting the tax breaks from said states and federal tax breaks, which, you know, of course, increases their numbers in their favor. When the right to work comes in, it doesn't do anything good for the people. And like I said, if go back and look at these right to work states, and if they were, because I know some of the southern states you can't, but you need to look the states that had, particular states you can look at, if they had the most unionization, and then they went to right to work, just look at the state incomes and the state taxes. Look at the difference. If you think I'm wrong, just look at the difference in the state incomes and the state tax rolls, and you'll see how much money the individual states lost when they became a right-to-work state as compared to what it wasn't. States will tell you, oh, so we can, you know, bring in new work because people are afraid of, you know, having to deal with the unions, and the unions scare employers, future employers. The unions don't scare future employers. They just don't have to come in and try to pay a decent wage. They want to get what they can get for the cheapest price possible. Why do you think all of our jobs are being moved overseas? Mexico is finally starting to feel our pain because they're moving jobs from Mexico to China and India now. Now Mexico is starting to say, hey, wait a minute, you can't, well, how's the deal?
How's the deal?
You know? Yeah, and it's getting to the point where, you know, some of the people are finally getting smart, and they're bringing some of their work back to the United States. I know New Balance is starting to make some more shoes back in the United States again. It's a baby step, but it's in the right direction. I remember when my favorite pair of jeans used to be a pair of Levi's that was made down in, I believe it was Kansas, wasn't it, or Tennessee, or
I thought it was Kentucky, but it could be any state in America. And yes, they were made here. Absolutely.
Right, and now they're made in five or six different places, and a pair of Levi's isn't what it used to be in the late 1980s. It's a whole different pair of jeans. And, you know, I'm not going to put on a product endorsement, but I'm just saying the quality has declined drastically, and we lost all those American jobs. There was a lot of people that worked at those, I believe, maybe it was Kentucky. But there's two factories, and I remember seeing the film about that, and what it did.
I'm from Alabama. My aunt used to work, I used to call it shirt factory. They used to make shirts, and she'd sew all the time. And she, you know, UAW Gypsy says Macon, Georgia. So we were close. We were there. Pretty close.
Right.
Thank you,
Archie.
He's the man, Archie. A lot of UAW Gypsies, man. A lot of them.
I put up on workers' replaces in unions. I put up something. I endorse it, so you have to endorse it. It was just a website that I come across. It was called This Information, and it had an article that caught my eye, and I shared that to workers' replacements and unions, And Teresa, thank you for posting up who that's from. The guy put this up. His name was George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. And it's called the Hegelian Principles, and it explains how the powerful got that way. And it's I'm not gonna go all into it. I'm just saying it's a big triangle, and at the top is synthesis, at the left corner there's thesis, and at the right corner there's antithesis. Just look through that a little bit, and you'll understand how people get to where they're at. Not only the corporations, but I liken this to our very own UAW. And with that being said, if you look at that and think that way, maybe you'll understand where I was coming from with this. But it's something, because well, in the article, if you break it down, just real quick, it says step one is it's like this. The principle is simple, consisting of only three steps towards a perceived goal. Once you're able to see how it works, you may want to analyze many of the events unfolding around you in terms of this principle. As the principle is often used today, it can be explained as this. Step one, create a problem or a conflict. Perceive a problem that exists and build it up out of proportion to its actual importance, or create a problem or conflict where none existed before. Step two, publicize the problem and create opposition to it. Relentlessly place stories around the problem in the major media outlets. Report on it daily until it becomes a steady drumbeat and has a truism for the public, who then begin clamoring for a solution to this problem. And then step three was to offer the solution. The best solution are those that appeal to the emotions of the public and make them think something really good is being done for them, when in fact something really bad is being done to them. The solution is one that the public never knew it needed until the conditioning was successfully completed. And I can see how that, some people can see how that happens in our government or in media, mainstream media today. But I think you could also look at that with our union right now, too. So it's not a time to be asleep at the wheel. Like we said, this is contract year. A lot of things are going to be coming at us hard and heavy. And Teresa, I got to put out there a big thank you for this. You're absolutely right. These young people and these tier two who are being wrongfully handled are going to be the lifeblood of this union. And it's up for us to educate them to go back and fight for what we have. Some of us have been through strikes. Some people have never been through a strike. I've been through a strike. I know you've been through a strike. The thing of it is these young people need to understand this is worth fighting for. And it's not for the reasons that the powers to be are going to tell you. It's much more than that. If you won't, you have to fight for it. Unfortunately, that's what has to happen right now, because I don't see them giving you that. You should have never been divided amongst us anyway. But what I'm saying is, you're going to be the hope of this union. It's going to be up to you to keep it strong or to let it become weaker. Because if we're getting more people in, we know how that happens. More people get in, more people are going to be voting on our national contracts. And they need to understand they're voting on their future.
Yeah, a bonus. That bonus, I'm telling you, that's why I believe they give bonuses is for to turn people's head and look the other way and vote yes on a stinky contract, because they don't make a lot of money. But I'm telling you, you got to be over and over and over again. Believe me, they're not just giving you that money. They get it back in spades.
Right. In that article from Detroit News, last Friday, Labor Secretary Thomas Peres echoed, "There is a direct link throughout American history between the strength of the middle class and the vitality of the labor movement. It's not a coincidence. When unions are strong, working families thrive with wages and productivity rising in tandem. But when the percentage of people represented by unions is low, there's a downward pressure on wages and the middle class takes it on the chin." And that's exactly what you said earlier. When we have well-paying jobs around us, it affects our community. It affects our county, and then eventually it affects our whole state. It helps to raise that living standard for everybody. Sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. Indirectly is the person who does have that well-paying job. Let's say, for instance, you're retired now, and you and your wife decide to go out and celebrate. Instead of going to a big chain restaurant, you go to that little mom and pop place down the road and you spend your money there. Where does that money go? That goes back to the mom and pop.
That's true.
Back into the community. Me and my wife have been doing this for the last 3 years I can think of. If we can buy locally from somebody, we may have to spend a little more money, but we try to buy local. Why?
And I find it better.
To give back to the community in which you live in. To help that community, because that gives you a sense of pride in your community. It sounds political, but it does cross that line in which we live, because we affect our neighbors in our community, in our towns, in our schools. If we're hurting, our community's hurting, our schools are hurting. You know, we all share that hurt. When communities are thriving, they do well. They do. You know, when you have more people working inside a community, then you have more firemen, then you have more policemen. And, you know, there's you know, the social aspect, there's a lot there. And like I said, we've got these young people, when these contracts come up, like you said, be wary of this big signing bonus. They want is, I believe isn't going to be in the best interest, especially younger workers. You're going to be looking at your future. If you think you hear about us, about how bad it is now, if some of these contracts come out and aren't in our favor, they aren't going to be in your favor either, because none of the tier two have retirement a pension. You know, I mean, so that kind of hurts us right there. You know, they don't have a pension like you and I had to work for. They've been given a 401k. I believe that's up to them to save, correct?
It is.
And if you're only making so much money,
right,
and you have to pay could possibly pay a fine for health care, and, you know, your pretty girlfriend really wants to get married, you know, it all starts adding up real quick. How much money are you going to have left to save? You got your dental bills, you got your optical bills, you know. You got your benefits you're going to have to cover. You got your insurance you're going to have to cover for yourself, as far as, you know, let's say you can afford to move into a trailer, you know, okay. You got to pay your rent, and you got to pay homeowner's insurance and your car insurance. On that amount, there sure doesn't seem to be a whole lot left to do anything. In fact, I would dare say, like you and I, when we first started out with a family, at that point you live from paycheck to paycheck for a while, don't you?
I was making a little over $6 an hour at truck plant when I hired in. And I made more money being a disc jockey at but I didn't have the benefits General Motors had. So when you have a little one on their way, you get into a plant. That was the game. And that was what happened.
Right.
And I enjoyed every, you know, I met a lot of great people. A lot of great people in my 35 years. And, Carrie Tobias, you. I know three people, me included, that voted no on that contract last time it came around. I can tell you that.
Right.
But you're right. You got to look in the future. What are they getting for this? Say it's $5,000. What are they going to get for that $5,000? Guarantee you quadruple.
Right.
What they're giving you. We know that for sure now, don't we?
Right. There was a gentleman, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, but he's the director of labor policy at the Free Market Mackinac Center, said that the full impact of the right to work has remained to be seen. And I'm going to give you a quote. This is pretty powerful. And when you put your thinking caps on, when you think about this, right to work still has not kicked in for many Michigan workers, most notably the auto workers. He said, as the contracts with the Big Three expire later this fall, tens of thousands of UAW auto workers will be eligible for right to work. This includes many second-tier workers who are not being paid or being paid far less than their co-workers because of UAW negotiated contracts. Past deals favoring older workers at the expense of the new ones may come back in to haunt the UAW when young workers are able to choose whether or not to support a union that has shortchanged them. Time I've seen somebody put that in print. We've talked about it.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
But somebody put it in print. This guy put his name to it.
Yeah, Walker wants that in Wisconsin. He definitely. I don't understand. They get an idea in their head, but they see other states that got it. Look at their economy. Look at, like you said, right down past our border, about 110 miles, 120 miles. Just check it out. Look how much they've lost since they've put right to work into effect. I don't see it done much for Michigan since we've gotten it at all.
No.
And why would, being an idiot that he is, why in the world is he set like a feather in his cap, look what I've done? I don't know. People in Wisconsin have to decide that. I did watch his speech, Freedom, whatever the hell it was, festival in Iowa yesterday. I watched all of them, as a matter of fact. This guy... He is the cherry on the Republicans' ass right now. He's the boy. You know, he came out and fired up the crowd. And,
right.
Yeah, I watched it. And he didn't fire me up, I'll tell you that. Trust the man. I do not trust the man. And the hell, you know. But, hey. We need to be three parts, not just two. We need three, if not four. Give us a choice. Give us a option on who to vote for. It's not a damn football game where you vote for root for a team. Your life, our life, and they all suck. Every one of them. Wall Street owns them all. Now rest my case. I'm going back to politics. Go ahead. You go back to the UAW. I go back to politics. I'm sorry. You go back to UAW. You don't have to. Oh, hold on. Somehow he got clicked off here. Let me get him back on here. Hold on, yeah. Scott. I'm getting you back up. There you are. There you are.
There I am. Okay.
Okay. I don't know how that happened. That's the first time. Went by itself.
Right. Please.
Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I was listening to what you were saying, you know, and you're right. About getting people fired up. And some people get fired up. Sometimes not the right people get fired up. Teresa also posted an article from the Wall Street Journal. And what it is, the U.S. Chamber and business groups filed lawsuits to stop the National Labor Review Board's what they call ambush elections rule, you know, because they changed the language on elections. And
right. These
big businesses don't want unions or these, I'm going to say, small to medium-sized corporations don't want unions coming in. They want to keep their profits extremely high and make money off people in bad working conditions and low wages and no benefits. Okay? That's just...
Right.
That's just what it really is. You'd think that some people would have the integrity to come in and pay you a decent wage, I mean, because they're already making money. Because if you weren't making money, you wouldn't be in business. Pay a decent wage to people, you know, so you can give back into the community, what have you. But that just shows you how much the unionized people, the unionized workforce, is absolutely being hated from at a national level when they go after a federal agency for changing the union organizing rule. My
right.
wife says it's called greed.
There's never enough for these people. Now, Boeing presupposes Boeing union seek conditions on $8.7 billion in tax credits. Now, it seems like they got enough from their union when they gave up pretty much their retirement. They capped their retirement.
Right.
But now, yeah, and I haven't read the article that just came up, but I will be looking into that. That's amazing. I hope they have it tied into the crappy contract they got.
Right, and I know yesterday she posted something. I'm trying to find exactly when the date is. I don't know. There's going to be, the justices are going to drill the UAW attorney in a right to work case. And that's going to go the right, without going through the whole thing, I'm just trying to figure out, all I know is that there's going to be, they drill the labor union attorney during a hearing Tuesday, which would have been, okay, January 13th, so long, what, 12 days ago? On whether
right.
Michigan's two-year-old right-to-work law applies to state workers. Now, we're not state workers, but the UAW does represent a lot of state workers. And I'd be willing to hear what happens on the outcome of this, because that's going to be a lot of people are going to be affected by what the said language and the outcome of this, you know. 35,000 state workers. That means there's more state workers in Michigan than there's auto workers, right?
I think so.
Close to it.
Yeah.
General Motors itself only have, 51,000 workers? You know, and you've got them in another state. So it'd be interesting to see how that comes out. I'm sure this isn't going to just be over in one day, but she posted that. I'm just thinking that, you know, somebody is trying to look at this. I just hope somebody would look at it from a financial aspect.
I do too. I hope people, you know, don't, it's not, it sounds like politics you're talking about, but it's not. It affects all of us workers, every one of us. Retirees, it affects everybody. Everything is going on right now affects every one of us, and it doesn't matter what party is in the office. It just seems like they kick us in the, the gonads, and they didn't do it.
Right.
I'm starting to break up. So you talk, Scott. I'm breaking up apparently.
A little bit, you are. Can you still hear me?
Well, yeah, I can. I fine. I just have to push another button to try it. Go ahead.
Right, but you're right. It does. It is politics, but it does cross over into our own very livelihood, because whenever labor laws are changed, that's going to affect anybody who's working. Not only just the person who's working, who's trying to earn a living. It also could positively or negatively affect the employer also, because it may have to change how the employer has to do business with the employees. And I mean, so when a labor law changes in such a magnitude as the right to work, that's going to affect everyone involved. Somebody's going to be the windshield, and somebody's going to be the bug in this case.
and it's going to be them. It's not going to be the corporation. You know that.
Right. Right.
Unless we band together and say, I can't say what I would say, but you know what I would say. It's all for them. It seems like everything, the labor law, every one of us. And I don't know if I'm breaking up, so go ahead, Scott.
No, you are a little bit, but not bad. But these laws are, once again, you need to understand who's backing these bills that became laws. I dare say it wasn't you and I, because we don't want to cut our own throat here, but somebody supports the politicians who introduce these bills that, if they get passed, become law. You need to look at who's lobbying behind the representatives or the congressperson to introduce these laws. What do they gain out of it? Part we have to do our education on when these bills, because bills are introduced almost every day, and find out what they are. And there's websites you can go to find out which bills, HR number, whatever. You can go see what these bills are. And some of them, they're lengthy. And instead of being very simplistic, they make them exceedingly long and tedious, so that you quit reading them to find out what's really in there. And sometimes the meat of the stuff is at the back. Sometimes the meat of the bill is in the middle. But you have to go through 175 pages to find it. It's crazy.
175 pages? They're usually about 3,000 pages, and you've got two days to read.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm just, for an example, but I'm just saying this. Who's the representative who's pushing for those bills, or who's introducing those bills?
Everybody.
You know what I'm saying? Right. You know, I mean, I agreed with a person a long time ago, and we've seen people make, you know, satire about it, but I think every politician should have to wear like a sticker on them saying who their corporate sponsor is. You know, is it Pfizer or Shell Oil or General Motors, or, you know, who donates money to that politician?
You're right.
That's your,
that would be with NASCAR. It would be like NASCAR.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Who, you know, like Intended 21, who's all for that? Maybe stick all over.
Yep.
GMOs. Kids on GMOs should be unbelievable.
You know, I mean, they come out, and some of these politicians, they don't want to vote in favor of the very person who supplies the main tax base. That's the middle class. We know that's no secret. Instead of trying to give us back a little bit, you know, like I know the bill was shot down here recently. Was it for so many days of sick days or sick leave or whatever? They shot that down. But how many days are you guys actually there doing your job? And you guys just got a pay raise. Really?
Right.
Well, and like you said, you know, they're multimillionaires, and you think they're going to worry about the middle class. You're mistaken.
Did you hear Gore once? He wants $90 trillion, you know, to be over a couple of decades, to ban all cars in all major cities in the world. That's his new thing. It's going to cost $90 trillion for mass transportation and things like that. So I'm living out in the country. I'd have to move into Flint. And that's his beat. That's the beat. For his...
How much was 90, that money? How much?
$90 trillion. I don't know where he's going to get it, but $90 trillion.
Wow.
We have 90 seconds.
Okay.
But anyway, we'll get back and try to stay on the UAW because we don't want to lose you in politics, but it does have a lot to do with what the UAW and General Motors price. It affects us all.
Yep. So, with that being said, I guess I'll say, I guess we get ready. How much longer we got here? I'll we say good night to everybody, and we'll see you next week at 7 p.m. And any questions, like I said, you go to Workers, Workplaces, and Unions, or if you got email, Faxer First, FAXER1ST, @AOL.com. And next week, I'll try to sit a little more on topic. With that being said, I'm going to tell you good night and have a good week.
And have a good work week and be safe. Take care of yourself and talk. And good night, everybody in the chat room.